The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
This episode of Talking Simpsons is brought to you by Gamefly, and you listeners right now can go to gameflyoffer.com/lasertime to get a free month of unlimited games.
I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where you need a heart to live. I am your host for this one, Bob Deceitful Cow Mackey, and who else is here with me today?
Christopher Prize Pig Antista.
I'm Henry Gilbert, and I'm here to do a podcast. Oh, this is always death.
And yes, Talking Simpsons is the Lasertime Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. And today's episode is I Love Lisa.
Nothing beats a good porno movie.
Which aired on February 11th, 1993. And Chris is going to tell us what happened on this mythical day in history.
The parody film Loaded Weapon 1 tops the box office. President Clinton appoints Miami lawyer Janet Reno to Attorney General, and Apple introduces a new PowerBook available for the first time with a color screen.
Wow. God, so I do remember Loaded Weapon 1. It was one of those jokes my parents would not explain to me. And we were watching it together, and they were interrogating a woman. It was like kind of like a Basic Instinct parody. Mm-hmm. And from the guy's perspective, she was just a beaver.
Yeah,
and my parents were laughing at that. I'm like, what? It's silly, but what does this mean? And then only later, I was like, wait a minute.
I looked it
that
up. I looked it up just for this. It's Emilio Estevez and Sam Jackson starring in the Naked Gun of God, it feels so.
The Naked Gun to Lethal Weapon.
The Naked Gun of Lethal Weapon movies. Both of those are dated concepts.
Well, it's so weird to see Samuel L. Jackson playing a parody of a part he'd play a million times later for real.
Yeah.
They're just like, no, we're hiring you to be the actual crazy cop. Not
a
the
year
joke
before Pulp Fiction.
Well, yes. It's no Silence of the Hams with Dom DeLuise, which exists and I think went straight to video.
And meanwhile, R.I.P. Janet Reno, another of 2016's deaths along
the way. Death sucked!
She wasn't on the show.
She didn't do a voice? Okay. After she burned down that Koresh compound, she flew over to The Simpsons. So yes, today's episode is I Love Lisa, a classic. So where do we want to start with this one?
This is the fucking Monster Mash.
Yes.
Doing the Monster Mash with you on this beautiful Valentine's Day.
Marty, why did you play that song today? There must be thousands of love songs.
Well, it's kind of a love song. All the monsters enjoying each other's company, you know, dancing, holding their evil in check.
You played the wrong record, didn't you?
I love that joke.
Why are you
so
doing
much
this to me?
Their back and forth is so great, and I couldn't tell. I'd have to see the original script to know if that was a post-show joke or not, because it bookends the show, and it does it so greatly. The Monster Mash cold open is one of my favorite jokes they've ever done.
It's great.
But
Bobby Boris Pickett's The Monster Mash, I'll say it right here, one of the best songs ever made.
But nobody
listen to Laser Time's Monster Parties.
That's a great episode.
But nobody, no character comments on it. It's never a thing. So I wonder if it's a post thing or not. They did have to animate Wiggum turning on the radio, but that could have been to any
the police
song.
Radio.
Yeah, and it could have been old animation. You're right, Henry. I think we've been talking about this behind the scenes. We're seeing the holes in season four as writers leave and people are working on the critic. They're building things out of old animation. They're doing episodes that are lacking guest stars they wrote them for. So I mean, but it still works. It's still a good joke built out of old pieces.
So great.
Yeah, and I went and got an old clip just because this is the show that kind of fleshes out Ralph as a character, I think, including giving him a last name and a lineage.
Yes.
Because when we were watching, what was it? Lisa's Pony. Lisa gets a pony. We see Ralph talks with the same voice actor who is, I forget who they are. Fuck, I wrote
that. It's Nancy.
But it's...
He certainly tamed that horse.
Yes, but what man can tame her?
That's Ralph chiming in at the
end. That's like a slightly nicer Nelson.
But an articulate... an articulate, refined Ralph Wiggum.
And loved that chewing gum walk very regularly. One of those guys was Ralph. So he was just like the smart commenting boy.
Well, he was called Ralph originally as he was supposed to be Ralph Cramden.
Yeah.
Like, that was why he was called Ralph. But in the Mr. Bergstrom episode, he is definitely becoming the less intelligent Ralph who's talking about Spyro Keats and Kevin biting me.
Yeah.
But this is Ralph becoming... totally the Ralph we know. Like, this is that Ralph episode.
This defined Ralph forever after.
I would say this is a very distinct and unique portrayal of Ralph, where he is aware of his own stupidity and shortcomings. Later, he would just be straight up, I guess the proper word would be intellectually disabled, where he's just oblivious to everything, just saying, like, non sequiturs and not understanding that he is, you know, a little dim.
Yeah. He becomes the joke monkey.
Yeah.
But in this one,
for a few years.
In this one, it's played on some levels, but first we get a bunch of scenes of Valentine's Day, which are nice. Like, Bart's prank is more involved than some Bart pranks. Like, he has to takes a lot of work to paint those.
It involves
things
a jeweler's
on
eye, like,
yes.
And then
it's called a loop. Yeah,
I love the cruelty of stapling over Santa Claus with the Cupid at the old folks' home, and then. A joke that never, like, felt like it should have become a runner, and I'm shocked they didn't do it, was that Barney's in love with Mo. Did they ever do that again?
I think it's one of the jokes from this era of The Simpsons and this era of the 90s where it's like, oh, this character is gay because that's funny, and that they will never reference it again. Like, Bart being gay was kind of like a runner throughout this, like, the possibility of Bart doing things that are considered gay.
Tie it
or feminine
to something else. But this joke was clearly that, because Mo's reaction was clearly gay panic.
Yes.
But it's one of my favorite jokes ever is when the brothel episode and all the characters walking out and everybody gasps and there's nobody to gasp for Barney because Mo is the closest surrogate he has to a partner in life. Barney!
Yeah.
It's so fucking funny. So if you not that he's even a Mo sexual, just that he's the only person in his life.
It's
he
cute
just
that
has no one else.
It's cute that Mo took it upon himself to be like, I will represent Barney because no one else will.
And then, you know, I don't know if you ever witnessed your father doing this, but my father never remembered any date ever, and he didn't think but I think it wasn't that my father isn't forgetful like Homer. He just doesn't care and doesn't...
Thoughtless.
Is thoughtless, careless. Those are words for it. But, didn't remember birthdays, didn't remember anniversaries. If he did remember Valentine's Day, he would just stop at a drugstore on the way home and buy a thing of hearts.
Like a rose in a tube.
Yeah. Or the rose
a pair John
of
Cena chocolate box from Walgreens, which I had to do for my lady one year. I went to her hometown. And I'm like, I need to slip away for a second and get something. And I couldn't. I had to buy something at a drugstore. And it was just very obvious that off-brand chocolate box. You get it at CVS.
And then that follows up with a Maude joke, which does just make me sad. Ned singing to Maude in the window. Arthur.
I do like the joke of Homer forgetting because it kind of exaggerates what we've seen before. Homer lying and then making an excuse and you hear the car speeding away. This time he runs upstairs. We see him falling out the window.
They all saw him. Like, they would know, and he should know he saw them, but his excitement, I could identify that of just take a guess, Valentine's Day. Yep. Yeah!
But I mean, we also get, just a jump to we get to meet the new Ralph, and I love.
Wait, real quick, the Apu thing. This was like the meanest Apu had been to Homer.
Yes,
that point. He had only just been the friendly Mr. Homer guy, but this is him extorting $100 out of Homer.
Apu, you gotta help me. I need a Valentine's gift for my wife.
Perhaps this might be appropriate.
Yes, you saved my life. How much?
$100.
What? That's highway robbery. I won't pay it.
Oh, I think you will.
All right, but I'll never shop here again.
If he discovers the discount supermarket next door, all is lost. Nickel off on expired baby food.
Sold!
So, did that scene just end with him paying it? Because That was all Frankenstein together. The nickel off on expired baby food.
Oh,
the thought in his head.
I usually notice those things.
And the sold was the total season three shot. Like, so they reused some stuff there. It's more padding. I'm more noticing in every episode.
Was
Apu
like blowing the dust off of the chocolate box too? Mm-hmm. Like they're
Where
old chocolates.
It off
oh, wipes
over
it off.
Yeah, which everybody loves ashy chocolates on Valentine's Day.
It's my stage name.
But okay, yes. Elementary school.
Oh, Ralph's introduction. Everything about this scene is great.
Miss mm-hmm. Hoover, can we exchange our Valentines?
Not just yet, Jenny. First, we're going to construct paper mailboxes to store the Valentines.
Isn't that just pointless busy work?
Bullseye. Get cracking. Yeah. Yes, Ralph.
My parents won't let me use scissors.
The children are right to laugh at you, Ralph. These things couldn't cut butter. Now, take out your red crayons.
Miss Hoover?
Yes, Ralph.
I don't have a red crayon.
Why not?
I ate it.
All this brings back horrible memories because I did for one... When I switched to a new elementary school in third grade, I thought, I got to do something to stand out, and I ate a crayon, and I became like the guy who...
Yeah.
For a little while, like, just feed him a crayon, he'll eat
Crayon Stafford Antista.
Yeah, Crayon Stafford
Antista. Well, so that's, by the end of the, by midpoint of the episode, Ralph's just dumb, but in these scenes,
pitiable.
It's played in a way, well, not pitiable, but that he is...
He's aware.
He's conscious
self-aware.
Enough.
Yeah.
He is aware enough that he like looks left and right like people are laughing. I said this thing and they're laughing. I got attention. Like
yeah.
He knows him saying, my head is glued to my shoulder. Like it's nervous laughter of a class clown, except he's a class clown too because he is such a dweeb. Like, I also do love that Miss Hoover is so, it's underrated ability of her to just be so on the nose of like, yeah, this is pointless busy work. Waste time.
Bullseye.
I thought it was funny because I guess they're drawing from them, the writers are drawing from them growing up in the 50s and 60s and mm-hmm. doing this. I did this in the 80s,
me
like
too.
Making the little mailbox, and you had to write a Valentine for everybody. There was
that,
no
yes,
selective
that
Valentine.
That was the rule.
But you
That's
can't,
how this wouldn't work
yeah.
in real
you
life.
You can't buy every time, like, here's an interesting experiment. If you want to know how our public education system is doing and how sardine-like the classrooms are getting, go into a Walgreens on Valentine's Day and see how many Valentines come in a box.
Yeah.
It went from like 12
600
to 18 to 30 because you have to cover the whole class.
You have to cover the whole class and at least 30, like you got to buy enough to cover everybody. And yeah, that was the rule. Though I remember as a kid, one year I was like, okay, you got to give one to everybody, but I'll give two to this person, this girl I have a crush on, and I'm going to give her two.
Ew, you had a crush
this
on a
This is
girl.
Before I knew things about myself. Well, I was only going with the girls because you're supposed to.
Supposed to.
That's a Futurama reference. But so that was my way around it of like, yes, everybody gets one, but you get two Valentines because you're extra special to me.
But I don't know if this scene is because... just to service the plot, or I do think everybody getting a Valentine is an institution of our lifetime.
Yeah,
I think
everybody gets a trophy.
I think
man.
If you, well, yeah. So what?
No,
what, do you think everybody
joke.
Loves you? You got to work for it.
Everybody does deserve a trophy.
Why shouldn't? Why nice. Shouldn't you be? If you're forced to celebrate a national holiday, everybody should be allowed to celebrate.
Yeah,
and that includes everyone getting a fucking Valentine and some candy. But I bet the writers probably. When I hear my dad's stories, and or like Charles Schulz has several Valentine's Day episodes about Charlie Brown never getting Valentine's
because
you only gave it to the people you liked and no one likes him.
Mm-hmm.
I
really did. I still feel for Ralph because I was also the unpopular kid in a class.
Yeah.
So,
oh man,
here you go, Ralph. You choose me. Happy Valentine's.
very specific instance of that happening to me.
Yeah.
I was just this dork who was just always standing around people and like all the cool guys and the cool girls were writing notes to one another to revel in their sexual aggression in an appropriate Southern Florida Christian way and giving notes to one another. And so every day they'd pass notes and they would like, it would just happen around me like in slow motion, like all these guys and girls communicating. And one day this one girl, I remember in it, beautiful girl named Lennon, like, would you can write me a note if you want. I'm like, I can. I go home, I like study poetry, and, like pour through it, rewrite.
Because
no!
You're so cool.
Crumple!
You're so cool, you're overthinking his note.
And then I bring it to her and she like, why did you, Oh, like she totally forgot that she threw me a pity bone. It's one of those memories that stands out. It's exactly like this.
This also awakens a complex. Well, it doesn't awaken a complex. It's one I fight every day of my life, and I think I've gotten better at. But like, it came around Ralph's age too, of just feeling like you don't actually like me. You pity me, and that is what that was the thing just through my head all the time.
Like being somebody else's burden, like I have to do, I have to do something about you, and it's going to be painful.
Like in fifth grade, a girl in class who I wanted to be friends with, she hated me. But her mom was like worked at the school and saw how sad I was and made her invite me to her birthday party, which was like the mom thought it was doing me a favor, but I knew I wasn't wanted. And
so I had
like,
the opposite, because like I didn't know I was being shown pity. And it was just like this brief shining moment where someone sticks up for me in front of a bully, or like, no, he's cool, check this out, and then giving me an opportunity to shine. Like a couple people did that for me, a couple kids, peers in Southern Florida high, like I just middle and elementary school, I totally got that service, and it didn't fly. It totally flew over my head that was pity. It just felt good.
Yeah,
and I encourage your children to do that for other children.
No, I saw it as pity. I couldn't get it out of my head, and so then now when just people are when people are nice to me or are being helpful to me, and I don't know them well enough, I'm like, you're just pitying me, aren't you?
Yeah. I want to go back to the choose me. There's an origin to that. Yes. It was on the commentary. It was Al Jean's idea, because he received a Valentine as a kid that said that exact same thing. And he always wondered, did that girl really like me? And later
it was
in life,
like, I choose you. I really do. It says on the inside.
I the last Valentine's that I bought was a joke, WWE Valentine's. And just looking at how they don't say things like that. They don't like, even be mine isn't really there. And the WWE ones, especially, like, have a slam-tastic Valentine's
Day.
My
Spidey sense says, have a great Valentine's Day.
Day sense is, you're awesome.
But they're just about, you being awesome, non-sexual thoughts, and
you
and
being dead is my kryptonite.
but choo-choo-choo's thing, Bob, you're saying.
And that is what he engraved on his, I guess, second wife's wedding ring?
Yep.
Or engagement ring?
Really?
Yeah.
Like before this episode came out?
What's that?
It was after.
Much later, yeah.
She was a writer for the show as well. That's how they met, and they... second wife, and got that engraved, and they went to they're the ones who they got married like at the Fox lot. Like they just
disgusting.
Hey, the rest of the writers come. We're getting it's their second wedding. You don't take it as seriously. You're just like, hey, okay,
come to the cafeteria.
And then they went to Ireland, where that's why on a previous one we talked about The Quiet Man. He talks about watching that on his honeymoon.
That's right.
Place.
Irish
we learned
honeymoon.
So much about Al Jean. The Vietnam flashback bit, by the way.
Yes.
So great. It's the continual ramping up of
Johnny
Skinner and Bart, like, I broke his brain. Like, that's a way to joke about PTSD.
Yeah. But, I mean, it is kind of cruel, but Matt Groening points out on this commentary.
It's one of my favorite commentary moments.
It's a great one. And he talks about how, I think he reveals on this commentary for the first time, he's like, I based Bart on my brother Mark.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he's a Vietnam vet and he thinks this is funny. So we thought we had license to do that. So maybe it's okay.
They said that they got a letter from a Vietnam vet that said, this is not funny. And then the best joke is Frank Mueller, the writer of the episode, says, you should have written back and said, there was no Vietnam flashback on it.
oh, my God.
I'm sorry. I understand PTSD is a thing. If you do it on an intercom in an elementary school, it is going to be funny no matter what. Like, that story will always be funny.
Well, I think that caused it to get a little more distance is that it is very clearly an Apocalypse Now joke.
It is.
He has, in case you didn't notice, he's not just shaving his face the way Martin Sheen shaves his face in the movie, but there's the file with a photo of Kurtz next to Skinner on the boat.
It has a filter on it. It's not a flashback filter.
That's the first time we actually see Skinner in Vietnam. Yeah. Is that correct?
Yeah, on his swift boat for truth.
Yes. He wasn't enough of a hero. Fuck.
I miss being mad about that.
What simpler times.
Yes.
But this is
oh, the beef hearts too, baby.
The beef hearts are great. This,
just do your job, heart boy.
This is me talking to the first girl I thought liked me, so even if I didn't, I had to try and engage.
Can I walk you home, Valentine? Sure, I guess. That Valentine sure was funny. Glad you liked it. It says, choo-choo, choose me. And there's a picture of a train. Yeah, nice gag. So, do you like stuff?
I mean, that is my conversational date move to this day.
Yes,
still,
like, yes. I've thought of that on like bad dates or getting to know a prospective partner. Like, I've thought of that Ralph line. Like, do I sound like this?
back when I was watching this, I was entering that horrific era of puberty where, like, I just whatever it takes to get to titty, just whatever
I
magic
will say
words
or do whatever.
I don't know what
to...
I'm supposed to do once I get to
but
titty.
But you're searching.
I have to.
I heard girls like it if you beg, Chris. Yeah,
well, it took me another decade to figure it out.
It's so. And I think this episode, I'm going to applaud it that it really. It gets inside Lisa's side of it that you don't. There's so many things in pop culture, especially back then, that were just like, this dude has a crush on a woman who's not interested in him. But
that's
it's from
true,
his
yeah.
viewpoint. Mm-hmm. This is Lisa, who, from the beginning, they make it very clear. She only pitied him. She is not interested in him. And she is being as clear as she can, but in a nice way of like, I'm not interested in you, Ralph. Like,
but it wasn't even that she wasn't interested in him. She's a little girl who's not interested
in
anybody.
She's also 8. Yes.
And then she didn't even explain it like, he's stupid and gross. It was more that, like, I just don't want to do that at all.
Yeah, she's not ready, and Ralph and her have nothing in common.
Yeah.
Also,
that's true.
And so I love her rushing in and locking the door. Like, that's a great sound joke. And then she runs right into. I like seeing Bart and Homer watching cartoons together. It's sweet.
I love it when Homer and Bart are laughing their asses off at the same itchy and scratchy cartoon.
About needing a heart to live.
I'm watching Looney Tunes with my father and mother, who did at some point see all these cartoons. Like, oh, I remember this one. And they make me laugh harder because they're laughing out of their own nostalgia, whereas I'm sort of experiencing Bugs Bunny for the first time.
And it's nice to feel united with your parents.
Oh,
that.
Yeah.
Like, it is a nice feeling.
Taste.
And it's here we learn about, we get more of a taste of the history of Krusty's show. Because
they hate Johnny Carson so
they
much
really
this
do.
Season.
All of these clips are just pure Johnny Carson moments.
But what's great, though.
Some of which we've seen before, like the animals interacting
with
him.
They've done the Krusty is Johnny Carson, but it's that Krusty has done every style of show throughout every period while being a clown.
It's so weird. I mean, like, so it's the 29th anniversary of the show. The show was written in 92. Implying that it starts in 63. We see one clip from 63.
Which, by the way, the year before, Carson had his 30th anniversary special, and then the next year he retired. So it's again, it's so specific about that even.
Oh, wow.
But
okay.
The first clip they show is very specific.
Hey, kids, don't forget to watch my 29th anniversary show featuring clips like this one of Sideshow Mel. Whacked out on Wowie Sauce.
Wowie Sauce.
Everyone's always kissing your ass. Well, I'm not afraid to tell you, you're a...
Oh, I'd give anything to go to that show.
I'd sell my firstborn son.
Hey!
You'll do as you're told.
Love that line.
By the way, you see that recycling of clip there to you'll do as you're told? Homer must have said a different joke after, instead of I'd sell my firstborn son, he must have said something else.
You mentioned it as an aside before we started recording that Sideshow Mel calls Krusty
an asshole. You can see the lip movement.
And the lip
movement.
Like,
the
right.
lip movement is very specific to asshole.
All right, so that scene is a very specific recreation of a moment from the Tonight Show, Johnny Carson, April 8th, 1977.
Wow.
All the guys working on the show were drunks. Like, all drunks.
And cokeheads.
Ed McMahon is just drinking booze out of a coffee cup throughout every episode of The Tonight Show.
I'm doing the exact same thing.
But you're not in front of a national audience.
Well, no one's paying us.
So on this one, I cut out the first minute where it's a little more meandering, but they're talking about the zoo woman who comes on the show and presents stuff, and Ed has been slurring his words and also getting very upset with Johnny over little things.
Really?
And Johnny's just trying to calm him down, but also looking at the camera like, this guy's drunk. You all see this, right? So this is where it gets even better.
Whacked out on Wowie Sauce.
For your people at home, try and turn down the volume of Johnny Carson's suit in this clip.
Oh,
what
boy.
The fuck, man?
It's blinding me.
Looks like the executive bathroom floor, if I can make a Simpsons reference.
John is an animal handler and a trainer. And you really think you're fooling everybody, don't you?
No.
And she also...
I'm just here to do my best to help you.
I know that. And she does her 3 horse shows a day. Did you know that? At the animal park. boy.
What?
What an exciting idea.
Would you like an army cot or something, maybe? Kind of catch up on a little, little nappy poo? Just might snap you right out of it. Okay.
I love Joan. I'm the only one who went down to see Joan. Doc has never seen her. You've never seen her. I went to the Wild Elm
It's all right. It's all right. It's okay.
But you're upsetting me.
No, I don't upset you.
I went down, Joan, and I
know you did. It's all right.
Don't say... I don't really know her. I went down there.
Oh, I know you did. I know you went down there.
And I held a baby gorilla.
I couldn't go with you that week. You held a baby gorilla. Good. All right. And let's get her out here quickly.
Wow. Dude. I think Johnny Carson is only half drunk.
And I'm barely connected to the world of Carson. That video on YouTube has 1 million views. So this is clearly a very famous moment that
it's
people
the official
of our
Johnny
age
Carson YouTube account. Yeah.
And I'm shocked they didn't title it Wowie Sauce or whatever. They're just very direct. Ed McMahon appears drunk on Johnny Carson's Tonight Show.
I like the appears, like no one can sue us. Yes. It appears.
Well, he's dead anyway. Yeah. Like you can say whatever you want about a dead man. So that is what they're directly referencing.
I'm sure that is one of several clips of him drunk. That's the most famous one.
That's the one I always saw in the clip packages. So it's why I identified with it too. Mm. And then that goes straight into Homer. I also, speaking of love life thoughts, sweet pity. Love life be without it?
Sweet pity is...
That is also me.
It would be my line of the show if not for another just... Something I've adopted into my regular speech every day that happens later.
Ralph thinks I like him, but I only gave him a Valentine because I felt sorry for him.
Sweet pity. Where would my love life have been without it?
What do you say to a boy to let him know you're not interested?
Well, honey,
let me handle this, Marge. I've heard them all. I like you as a friend. I think we should see other people. I know speak English.
I get the idea.
I'm married to the sea. I don't want to kill you, but I will.
Honey, I tell this boy that you're very flattered, but you're just not ready for this kind of thing.
Thanks, Mom.
And if that doesn't work, six simple words. I'm not gay, but I'll learn.
That's my line of the show.
He upped it from three simple words. I am gay.
Why not? I'll give it to you, Hank. You burned it.
Thank you.
Mine would have been Ralph shows up and swears to do anything for the father of the woman he loves. And
yeah. The tar fumes are making me dizzy.
Yeah, they'll do that.
I do say that.
Is Homer in a hammock?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I was responding to a tweet about The Last Guardian, and I was like, don't make fun of Trico, the sweet dog boy. And somebody said, he just ate me. And I was like, yeah, he'll do that.
All right. But before that line is the massive revelation of this episode.
It's a reveal. It's a full-on
reveal. It is quite a reveal. Yeah. In my house, when the camera pulls out and we see who Ralph's dad is, my mom and I were both, I remember being like, he's his dad. Even, oh my God, it's perfect.
In Camp Krusty, we hear Wiggum, Ralph.
Yes.
And he gets, as they're throwing out the different mail.
She says, Wiggum, and throws him in, and it is Ralph, but an off model Ralph, but it is his voice. He says, my insulin.
So Ralph is diabetic.
I'm one of those people, I have this a lot watching Seinfeld. I have no confidence in my own memory. Mm-hmm. I just assumed. This has been going on the whole time? What did I miss? What did I miss?
But
Chief Wiggum is Ralph's dad?
They admit on the commentary it was just, they're like, oh yeah, he should be the dad. And then it's funny. And they had no other plans than that. And it is funny. It's perfect. They also say because they didn't plan it, that's why, unlike Milhouse and other parents, they don't look exactly like their kid.
I forget her name, but Miss Wiggum looks exactly like...
Oh, Clancy.
Clancy.
Clancy. But him shooting the nut...
I didn't capture because it's such a visual scene. Please watch just that scene.
All the rest of you... nuts.
It's a great metaphor for how he gives advice and then immediately destroys that advice. He's like, keep going at it, never lose your cool, and then he just fires at the nut with his
remember
gun.
Remember that, the rest of you nuts.
I love when he unbutton. Well, he doesn't even unbutton his shirt. He just forces his belly through it.
And he goes, oh yeah. And that Ralph isn't shocked that he shoots the gun.
I'm sure
he's
Ralph's
used to
it.
Well, I have to close my ears, but this is when he shoots his gun. And also just the supreme unsafeness of breaking nuts with a loaded gun.
Gun with the barrel
with the barrels pointed at his chest.
Yeah.
Like, so he's...
Oh, it's so great.
Again, it's the Simpsons great, movie, as he's eating donuts off the barrel yeah. and shoots his hat off.
Whoa, like, oh, that was close.
So I think we have one more Johnny Carson reference. Again, we saw this with the wolf in...
Marge Gets the Job.
That's right, yeah. And the exact same kind of scene where it's like Krusty being Carson interacting with an animal and
this
it goes
a lot
wrong.
Faster.
Yeah.
So. Hey, boys and girls. Only 4 days till my anniversary show. 29 years. And when I came on, they said I wouldn't last a week. You know where those reviewers are? All dead. How you doing on there, fellas? Anyway, now why do they call this a urine monkey? Found out.
That's funny for so many reasons. We have to go to that show.
Forget it. To get those tickets, our parents would have to be part of Springfield's cultural elite.
Can you believe Flanders threw out a perfectly good toothbrush?
Actually, this reminds me, there's a weird, like, I would call it an F story, because it's like two scenes of Homer stealing things from Flanders that goes nowhere.
He's just been doing it.
But
I only got that sound because it's the most really Doug good. Sound effect I've ever heard in my life, because it sounds like Dan Castellaneta making toothbrush
noises. Okay, what is he saying you about? Is, like, is Homer... Homer knows a toothbrush from the garbage should be gross, so why would it be...
That's the beauty
why
of the
would
joke.
He realize now
it tastes worse than he could ever imagine.
Homer is stupid. He's like, why would you throw out a perfectly good toothbrush? And it's like, it's been in the garbage. It's been used. It could be used to have clean things, like a toilet.
Yes.
You never know.
I do like the that's funny for so many reasons. That's them even commenting on themselves of how cheap the urine monkey is.
Urine monkey is such a great joke.
A urine monkey.
Again, we have a forum on Laser Time. That name has to be available.
And that logo of Krusty in the Al Hirschfeld style, that was drawn by David Silverman, who is an Al Hirschfeld super fan who even like has a drawing of himself drawn by Al Hirschfeld because you could commission work from him.
I'll tell you how authentic this is. Like in every Al Hirschfeld, I think every Al Hirschfeld caricature, you can find the word Nina hidden inside of it because that's his daughter's name. Yeah. And you can find that in the Krusty caricature. Yes, the word Nina.
That's amazing. I didn't know that. You one-upped me there, Bob.
Man, this show has so many great clips. I love how
they'll do that.
They'll do that. But the idea that it's a brilliant stroke to make Ralph's father Wiggum. Because, man, he starts throwing his weight around once his son... it looks like this is the first thing Ralph has ever asked for. That's just me inferring that. But even Hoover is compromised.
I've selected the cast for our President's Day pageant. Martha Washington will be played by Lisa Simpson. George Washington will be played by... Ralph Wiggum.
What? This is a travesty. Everyone knows I'm the best actor in this ridiculous school.
Sit down, Rex.
I will not sit down. Someone's gotten to you, you deceitful cow.
Mm-hmm.
It's absurd, Rex. Ralph won the part fair and square.
That's the signal. Take the boot off the car, boys.
Corrupt so, cops, I never.
I have a lot of things to say about this. So Rex, we only see him in this episode. He's like the acting, the fey temperamental acting child.
It's a great name for a little boy born a 1940s actor.
Well, he's based on Rex Harrison from My Fair Lady, which is also
And Dr. Doolittle.
That too, but it's also the voice that Seth MacFarlane is doing when he does Stewie.
Yeah.
So that's Stewie saying, you deceitful cow. Like, that's just a Stewie line. Like, it's exactly.
Who does his voice here?
That's Dan Castellaneta. Yeah.
It's credited as
Michael
Carrington.
I saw that on
Michael
Wiki
Carrington.
Too. It's wrong.
Like, that's so wrong.
And I wasn't trying to figure that out, but we'll get to it in a second.
And I have one more thing to say.
You'll hear Michael Carrington soon enough.
That's what I thought.
Like, Miss Hoover is like a superstar in this episode. Mm-hmm. She is never used more than she is in this episode. Yeah. She's even, like, lecturing Bart and disciplining Bart.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Instead of, were they just like, we don't want to pay for Edna. Like,
that
we don't want to pay.
Yeah.
It was just like, we're not giving her the money this week.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Thank you, fine folks, for listening. Hope you're not too bored. You know what the perfect solution is for being bored and always has been? Goddamn video games. That's why this episode is brought to you by Gamefly. And just so you know, you listeners can go to gameflyoffer.com/lasertime and get started with a free 30-day trial of the service. What is Gamefly? It's like Netflix, but for games. You should know that by now. You create a queue. They ship out 2 to 3 games to you. It's up to you. You play them for as long as you want, ship them back, and they'll just keep on shipping stuff from your queue. This is a great way to save money on not only playing a bunch of new releases, a bunch of old releases, because not only does Gamefly have over 8,000 titles ranging from PS4, Xbox One, Wii U, PS Vita, they go all the way back to the original Wii, the original Xbox, PS2 in certain cases. I know, right? And to sweeten the service even more, Gamefly allows you to buy a game back. Have you kept it out for a long time? Do you want to just keep it? Are you that settled into the multiplayer? You can buy that game back from Gamefly at an extremely reduced cost, and they'll send you the box and manual as if you purchased it anywhere else. Once again, you don't have to take my word for it. You can get started with a 30-day free trial for yourself by going to gameflyoffer.com/lasertime. You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
My story, though. So, for a long time, we've had this picture hanging up in the living room, but it seems like more of a kitchen item. It's like, let's move this into the kitchen. Okay. So, I put one nail in, and I'm like, good. Well, it says, you know, if I go here and go here, this is where the next stud should be based on every other wall in our house. So this is where the stud should be. There's no light fixture on that parameter. So I'm not going to like bust a, you know, electrical anything. So I'm clear. Mm-hmm. Nice. Hammer two. All right. Oh, little resistance here. So I'm going to hit it harder. Kabam. I hear a torrential.
I heard that.
A torrential downpour of water gushing at maximum speed.
Oh, my God, really?
And I'm like, let me... And I take the nail out of the wall.
Oh, it scorched you in the eye?
And I swear to Christ, like a Bugs Bunny cartoon struck oil, water shoots out in a perfect arc at high pressure through the entire kitchen and hits me in the fucking face, goes all over the floor... The first, my instinct, immediately, what do you think you do?
Put your mouth on the hole.
Put your finger over it.
I put the nail back in.
Oh.
And it fucking worked. It sounds like a fucking waterfall.
Holy shit.
And it's, by the way, it is 10 o'clock at night on Saturday.
Oh my God.
Ooh.
Okay, first thing, we have to call a plumber. Mm-hmm. I call one. But yeah, there's a lot of, quotes 24-hour places.
Really?
She's like, okay, can I get some information? Like, fucking fine. What's your full name? And your email address? And what's that zip code? And can I also get a block? I'm just like, the whole lobby. Our apartment is above a garage and and a lobby, and it is filling with water.
Whoa!
And she's like, the soonest we can get out is tomorrow morning. Like, did you not hear what I said? And
tell me your availability first. I spell my.
It's just like
my old
Counter
Strike name
and
my email.
How about?
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again. But Krusty knows what side his bread is buttered on, and has given tickets to Ralph, and then gives them to Lisa.
In the tunk.
Yeah, in the tunk.
And but also, the Bart holding up the Krusty Home pregnancy test that says, make... Oh, you got it all here.
Yeah,
right.
So
okay,
great.
We're good.
Tickets to the Krusty anniversary show! Oh, he must want me to go with him.
Oh, it isn't fair. I'm 10 times the Krusty fan you are. I even have the Krusty Home pregnancy test.
I'm not sure I should go. I don't even like him.
You're right, Lise. You shouldn't go. It wouldn't be honest. I'll go, disguised as you.
What if he wants to hold hands?
I'm prepared to make that sacrifice.
What if he wants a kiss?
I'm prepared to make that sacrifice.
What if he...
You don't want to know how far I'll go.
Another Bart could be gay joke.
Yeah.
But that's...
Gay
for
pay.
But that reference there is like, that's too far. They're 8.
Yeah.
Ralph won't want to do anything else than a kiss.
Ralph will want to fuck you and your dick. Yes.
Do we have a clip of how Wiggum got those tickets?
Only
well,
the one
first,
I got at the beginning.
The pregnancy...
Nothing beats a good porno movie.
But so first, the pregnancy test says it may cause birth defects, which
yeah.
If it's something you have to pee on, how can it even do that? Like, how do you...
Maybe
you
have to put it in you. So, well, like, we didn't... you don't have the clip, Chris, but it's just, like, I feel like this is, like, could be the dirtiest joke.
It
so
is.
Wiggum is telling the kids about how he busts Krusty in a porno theater, and there's a great like tag on this, which is made of reused footage, but it's also very disgusting.
It's a good porno movie.
Chief Wiggum, is this a bust?
Yeah. That's just what it is, a bust.
That story isn't suitable for children.
Really? I keep my pants on in this version.
So, yeah, Wiggum was...
Police even goes,
it's one of the dirtiest jokes in the Simpsons
Chief Wiggum
ever.
Was beating off in a porno theater.
Well, I mean, now that we know, what else do you do in a porno theater?
So, yeah. Paul Rubens, in July 1991, was arrested.
Unfairly. In Sarasota, Florida, my home state. Yes.
And so, this is a very direct reference to a children's entertainer being caught in a porno theater.
Yeah.
It is a very direct reference to the Pee-wee thing.
Wow.
But right before this, it was Homer hanging Ned's diploma on the wall.
From Oral Roberts University, which is a Christian college.
Yes.
But why did Ned throw that out?
Yeah.
That's what I want
to
know.
That's one Homer had to break into his house and take.
Yeah.
And he's like, you do mean stealing, don't you? Like, that was a good line.
Ah, yes, I had that one as well.
Is it right to take things from people you don't like?
Sure it is, honey. You do mean stealing, don't you?
Well, actually, it's not as bad as stealing, but my conscience is bothering me.
Your conscience? Lisa, don't let that pushy little weenie tell you what to do.
Homie, that's a terrible thing to say.
Oh, shut up.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
So Homer's weenie conscience isn't doing so hot, and he'll be dead in about four episodes, and he'll be buried in the ground by evil Homer.
And he has the same voice as the recruiter of the Communist Party.
Yes.
I don't know if you guys agree with me, but I feel like this Homer stealing stuff probably was the B-plot until they just erased most of it.
Yeah.
And they felt like the Lisa stuff was the strongest. There could have been like a payoff to it, but it's just like two scenes and that's it.
Yeah,
they save their best jokes from it. Let's save those two jokes. But then the next scene is where we hear Michael Carrington as the announcer of this Krusty thing and the voice of Sideshow.
It's the Krusty the Clown 29th anniversary show.
We watch as much of the show as we have, like, who is that guy?
Angry young man.
Yeah, if it's not one of these six main characters or a guest star, it's probably Michael Carrington.
If it sounds like a black person.
Because he is the only black guy that Simpsons writers apparently know who's a writer.
Well, like, there was the guy who created the PJs, who I think he is a black man and he was a writer, maybe, for the Simpsons.
Oh, yeah.
Eddie Murphy, right.
Yes. I forget his name, but on a classic Simpsons commentary moment. Okay, so flash forward to the Mensa episode.
Yes.
Where they make fun of East St. Louis. And so... one of the writers on the show, or a friend of a writer on the show who later would become a writer on the show, is a large black man who is from East St. Louis. And so
Wilmore created the PJs?
That's him, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know if he's from there, but he pretended to be the mayor.
Yeah, so it's not Larry Wilmore. It's a different guy.
Okay.
Steve Tompkins?
Yeah, Steve Tompkins. Okay. So he's pretending to be the guy from East St. Louis who is then threatening the writer of the joke.
It
was Matt Selman. He's threatening Matt Selman and saying, like, I'm from East St. I'm the mayor of East St. Louis. You really hurt our feelings. And can I just get a moment alone with him? And we're just like, sure.
I'll tell you what. Actually, I just heard this commentary like a few weeks ago, Henry.
Wow.
So someone from East St. Louis called Matt Selman on the phone, like, why are you making fun of our city? And he said, because it's a crack-ridden slum. And he was like, right. I thought that was so funny. And so he got his comeuppance by having Larry Wilmore or Steve Tompkins, whoever it was.
It's Steve Tompkins.
It was not Larry Wilmore.
You know
is the,
Larry yeah. Wilmore. Come on.
Impersonate the mayor.
Come on. Larry Wilmore, man?
But meanwhile, Michael Carrington is their only African American friend from Harvard, I guess. But he is funny, and he wrote the heart attack episode. Elmer's Triple Bypass co-wrote it, and
with Richard Pell.
And so he is the announcer here, and he plays Sideshow Raheem, which was a joke they cut out of some airings.
This is my confession. I've been watching off a torrent to make it easier for me to capture sounds from it, and I didn't see Sideshow Raheem at all.
Yeah,
it's not a great joke.
Those syndicated episodes have the same consistent cuts throughout. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, they're decided way ahead of time. But yeah, I like angry young man.
Yeah. So another production note on it: when Krusty throws to the president in the audience, they animated both Bush and Clinton because they didn't know who it would be, and so they subbed in Clinton at that time.
And according to Groening, he had to like pressure them to have a Clinton scene, like an alternate Clinton scene, because no one thought he would win. Apparently, on the writers' staff.
I wonder what that's like. Okay. Yeah. But I did love the Robert Frost poetry reading because Conan O'Brien is a producer on the show. Credit at this point. One of my favorite moments in the show, he does this, Conan O'Brien does this exact thing on his late night show to Tom Hanks.
That's right.
The exact same thing. Where like, and he says almost the same thing, like, yeah, sure, a little snow would be fine. And he dumps a giant load of snow on Tom Hanks. It's so fucking funny.
Well, and then,
hey, Frosty, you want some snow, man?
We discussed this, and I said no.
So that was from, if that clip is from 1963, Robert Frost died January 29th, 1963.
That probably killed him.
So, yes, that's what kills him.
And asbestos-laden fake gnome.
And right before that, Krusty whiffing his monologue joke, again, just cruelty to Carson. Is that pointing out, like, Carson's monologues aren't even funny. No one would laugh at him. Just the applause, and nobody... It's like people would laugh at his first joke on his anniversary show. They wouldn't be silent.
Bart can't be the only fan in the world.
I heard a story about Carson recently, and it was like, basically he was like, oh, they're making fun of me. I'm going to quit. Because he knew that it was time to quit when they start making fun of you. Mm. And this is like one example of how he was like out of date.
Three decades of television's, as being television's coolest man.
Yeah.
And when they start making fun of you, yeah, it's over, man. And I like only going back and like listening to, I forget what I was watching, like the televised 90s version of a podcast, but like comedians hated Johnny Carson. Being the gatekeeper to like whether you're successful or not.
But
while
if he let
being
you
very
through
unfunny.
That gate, if he let you through that gate.
But not a lot of people got up to the gate.
Yeah, it was about getting booked on it. And also, I think he liked two women comedians ever, Joan Rivers and Joy Behar, and then no other woman got to go through.
I thought Ellen DeGeneres got through.
Oh, Ellen did, you're right. Ellen did.
So do we have Krusty hopped up on goofballs?
Oh, my God. The animation is so great.
Try to hide. Break on through the other side. Yeah! What was I on?
Is that the one?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah. I love them establishing...
out on television.
Yeah. I love how they establish the history of the show. We'll see more of this in Bart After Dark in season 6. Just like, he has been doing this for 30 years.
In every format.
Now almost 60 years. If you want to count this as canon, you should.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he's talking to Meanie as well.
I just hope these jokes aren't... Like, I know... People can watch The Simpsons today as if it were made today, despite the quality and animation and the stretching by FXX. These jokes, they have to go over the head of anybody under 20. Like,
yeah.
Like, how old is this show? I totally forgot.
I did it as my intro thing. I always think to, this is always death. I'm just like,
I love,
oh God. I don't want to do
I
this.
I love audience participation.
I think of this whenever I do a live Retronauts panel, and sometimes I say it. It's like, now it's time for the Q&A panel. This is always death.
Now for my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always death. All right.
I love Ms. Rupert.
Oh, no, please don't show me with Ralph.
What's your name, son?
Ralph.
And is this your girlfriend, Ralph?
Yes, I love Lisa Simpson, and when I grow up, I'm going to marry her. No!
Wow.
Now you listen to me. I don't like you. I never liked you. And the only reason I gave you that stupid Valentine is because nobody else would.
Watch this, Lisa. You can actually pinpoint the second when his heart rips in half. And now.
I just want to... compliment the lapse of time there and how brilliant that transition was from
was
the live show to Bart watching it on tape.
It was a great, yeah, it was a great, like, I want the VCR that actually plays the sound as you go frame by frame.
Yeah, that was a bit much, but yeah. But you're taking away from the best, one of their best act breaks ever, because her saying that immediately going into her regret the next day is so, like, speedy and efficient use of time. And then just watching his heartbreak in slow-mo, pausing it when he sees his heartbreak. I've seen that, like, that gets memed a ton these days, too. I've seen it a lot, just the exact moment someone's heart
usually
breaks.
Right into Marge crunking.
I like that we didn't see the aftermath of that. The awkward ride home, what happened immediately, Wiggum trying to, like, console Ralph. Like, I'm glad I just, like, cut right to the Simpsons home the day after.
And though apparently Wiggum would have driven him home fine because he thought it went well.
Thought it went great.
Yeah.
Till he learns the truth, and this is a great clip for these Life and Times.
Something wrong, officer?
Yeah. Got a taillight out.
Where?
Right there.
You know, one day honest citizens are going to stand up to you crooked cops.
They are? Oh, no. Have they set a date?
He is officially dumber than Homer in this episode.
I love how he immediately caves under the threat of pressure.
He immediately acknowledged it like crooked cops like me.
And also him chasing the duck, like his waddle while chasing the duck.
It didn't work well in sound, but so funny.
And they talk on the commentary that they were uneconomical of using Valentine's Day and President's Day in the same episode when they're joking like we're running out of days and we're going to have to do Arbor Day soon.
It's great. They're showing up like a decent passage of time without trying very hard.
It's been a week, but it also didn't stop them from doing later Valentine's Day episodes.
That's
anyway,
true.
They did a number of them.
A bad clip show came out of that.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the Elton John episode.
Yeah, with Cupid.
With old Mint Julep.
There's too many things happening on The Simpsons that make me think of these life and times. And the Mediocre President song is a good one. Because
I didn't need to see all this President stuff right now.
If you're reading as much as I am about what systems are in place to dethrone an elected president, it's
reading
because of
lot.
These people.
Yeah.
And it's because, especially the last one, I love the song so much.
Well, it's just a great song.
It's one of the more unsung Simpsons songs, I think.
Is.
It's so catchy, it's so like on point, and it's short.
Yes.
And I think George H.W. Bush would be in this if he wasn't just deposed by Clinton.
Maybe.
But I think this, let's hear it first.
Yeah.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a wonderful evening of theater and picking up after yourselves.
That's how
we begin with a tribute to our lesser-known presidents.
We are the Mediocre Presidents. You won't find our faces on dollars or on cents. There's Taylor, there's Tyler, there's Fillmore, and there's Hayes. There's William Henry Harrison.
I died in 30 days.
We are the adequate, forgettable, occasionally regrettable caretaker presidents of the U.S.A.
Love the bassy trumpet.
I love the phrase caretaker presidents.
Yeah.
We're just keeping the doors open.
The fascinating history of William. He was the guy who got pneumonia for like giving his inaugural address.
They said he ate cherries at the wrong time.
Apocryphal, but I think he caught pneumonia and that could kill you at that time. Yeah.
He also gave too long of a speech.
Hours in the rain during his inauguration and like the country wasn't ready for that transition to power yet. And they constantly had to write things to keep idiots and malcontents and unqualifiables out of the office. And there are means, is all I'm saying. Stop pulling away from the mic.
That I was going to mention that joke of not reacting to Skinner's joke.
Yeah.
They already did that this episode. Like, it was just a little weak because they already did that with Krusty not getting reacted.
They're going to do that on Dave when he swings real hard in Michigan Apocalypse.
But I bet Jeff Martin wrote it, but when I think of guys who love presidents, I think of Conan. I think this was a Conan thing, though it is just a Harvard thing of like, I learned every president and I know all president history.
But upon reading whenever I stumble upon one of these presidents' names in like when reading something, I think of this song. Especially like Fillmore.
Dude, I wouldn't know any of those people without like one poster in elementary school in The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. But this is what's I find to be great, and it's not really maybe it's my interpretation that Ralph gets over the heartbreak by finding another way to excel, or maybe he excels because he's a failure.
He channels his grief and misery into this role and finds a way to express it. I don't think it's as lame as like a hidden talent. It's just like in the moment, working through his shit.
We never see him act again.
No.
I also admire Springfield Elementary for leaving a working fireplace on an elementary school stage.
Impressive. Well, that Butt Nixon joke was, as a kid, I did not know who Nixon was. So I didn't get that joke.
And now they could not do that show, that joke on
TV. No way.
Yeah.
And the Hasta La Vista AB thing, that's a little lame.
It is kind of lame. But it's something that Bart would do.
It is what Bart would do, but I'm thinking more of the construction of this. So the planned scene that a teacher put on was the assassination of Lincoln.
It is
for
a little
a
weird.
Kid's presentation.
With one line from Milhouse.
But at least showing the audience's reaction of like, He's killing. Why are we watching Lincoln's assassination? And Homer's like, get a boy, finish him off.
I would have liked it more if Bart like crashed the play as the assassin, and you know Milhouse was like giving the Gettysburg Address or something.
Ralph ends up killing it.
Would you put a price on the air we breathe or the providence that sustains us?
But couldn't we just give in to the British?
Never!
That boy is magnificent.
He makes me want to learn more about our founding fathers.
To the library!
Yeah!
Yeah, Bart moves everybody. Willie cries. And you know what? I wanted to mention Willie because I think we see his first like contentious relationship with Skinner. Yeah. Before it's sort
can't
of like
water it down anymore.
Yeah, before they just sort of have their own lines, but now you can see there's tension between them.
It's a cheesy Scotty joke, but I do like it is very true. Watering down that orange drink is what happens. Like you never want to actually drink orange drink at a school function.
I'd like it to solidify Skinner's dedication to the orange drink.
Yeah.
And the Legends of the Hidden Temple, Teddy Roosevelt's speech.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoy
that's
some
right.
orange
well, he's
drink.
He's talking about the money they lost. That end production, like him lifting up into the air, like, how much did that cost the school?
Yeah.
I did love the sign gag, too, of you must see it to get course credit. Principal Skinner, like, that was the review.
Yeah.
I like that.
And Lisa ends up giving Ralph a new card.
Lisa! Hi, Ralph. You were great tonight.
Aw, thanks.
I've got something for you.
Let's be friends. It says bee, and there's a picture of a bee on it.
I thought you'd like it.
So one of the few good jokes in another Simpsons clip show, probably one of the worst clip shows they've ever done, is them mentioning how this was an unseasonably warm Valentine's Day because they're just walking outside with
true.
No jackets, there's no snow. I mean, presumably they're in a Midwestern-type setting or a place with seasons, you know. February would be cold.
The environment now. Yes. Oh,
that's true, though. I mean, the winter of Mr. Plow was a harsh winter.
Yeah,
though then again, maybe this is post-God getting mad at Mr. Plow.
And
turning up the heat, and so that's why they're so unseasonably warm.
That's true.
And they try to big up Ralph at the end, saying he's popular now. All these other girls like him. He found self-confidence, but because it's a sitcom, as we'll also see in the next episode, this progress is dashed by the next time. Like, Ralph's back to square one again.
And I feel, Henry, like, if David Merkin was running this episode, he would make a comment on how this would just go back to normal. Because he was way into that. Like, progress, we're rolling it back, nothing happened, nothing changed.
Another
that's
wacky
it.
Adventure.
Yeah.
Ay, caramba.
Yeah. Just a reset.
That's the spirit.
But that's what the end of the episode is, a reset of the status quo.
Well, it resets for them, but Ralph is more popular after winning. It resets their relationship, but Ralph is more popular after it, seemingly helping his problem. Like, now other girls like him, so he doesn't need to worry about Lisa. The Monster Mash resuming is the greatest ending.
My
I love
favorite.
That ending
we gotta
so
close
much.
Out with Monster Mash.
Oh, look at that.
Attention all units. Riot in progress at...
Not tonight.
Hey! Bill and Marty here wrapping up a beautiful President's Day.
To George and Abe and all the rest, here's a special song just for you.
I was working in the late one night when
doggone
my
eyes
began an eerie sight for my monster from
his... That's great. I love how it plays out throughout the entire credits, and they make no excuse. It's like, well, maybe Dracula is the president of Halloween. And
And their swings are like timed to the music. It's I like that too. It's just a beautiful ending. It makes Monster Mash kind of heartfelt.
You never
like,
hear that song outside of October. It's great.
So great.
Love that song.
And now people, this is during Christmas, they're listening to this Valentine's Day episode, and they're going to hear the Monster Mash.
I warned you.
So
it's very much like the next year's Halloween episode that ends with a Christmas joke.
That's right.
Yes.
Happy Halloween, everybody.
Which we'll get to in... Jesus, maybe August.
It'll be much sooner than that, Chris.
If
America's still around then. But hey, let's be friends. There's a picture.
Yes.
This is a very sweet episode. And I also like that it's sweetness filled, like the B plot is just being mean to Johnny Carson.
And he deserves it. Yeah. What a horrible man.
They basically imply he was like he had sex with all of his secretaries. So he was a total philanderer. I don't want to shit all over him.
60s and 70s, probably very consensual.
Certainly.
Probably under their contracts.
Yeah.
This has been a mercifully short Talking Simpsons. Thanks so much for listening. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me online on Twitter as Bob Servo. I also write for Something Awful and Fandom.com. You can listen to my other podcast, Retronauts. It's a classic gaming podcast every Monday on Retronauts.com or USGamer.net. It's great. Everybody else, tell us where we can find you.
LaserTimePodcast.com, where you can find Laser Time, which did a whole show about the phenomenon of the Monster Party song.
Yes.
Kicked off by Bobby Boris Pickett's Monster Mash. It is the most I've ever annoyed Brett in an hour before, and I take great pride in it. Nobody liked the episode when it came out. It's kind of coming around, because that guy, that is not the only song that guy made, but they all sound like that.
I do like how mad Brett got.
Yeah.
It's like, I was doing this thing.
I was doing X late one night, something that rhymes with night, and that he did that over and over again.
I love Werewolf Bar Mitzvah, Spooky Scary.
Boys becoming men. Men becoming wolves.
H-E-N-E-R-E-Y-G is my Twitter, and I thank you for following me there and all the wonderful things I write on fandom.com. I also hope that you choose to support us on patreon.com/lasertime. It's what made this show possible. It's where you'll find the first season of Talking Simpsons is on there if you want to listen to it, as is our season two and three wrap-ups. Mm-hmm. Bob and I were just talking about potential things to do for the season 4 wrap up.
It's
got
exciting.
Some fun ideas.
Yeah.
Please support us there. It makes it all possible. And we've got tons of great other podcasts on there. Christmas goodies as well that are Patreon exclusives that you're missing out on if you're not part of it.
You want to watch Sonic's Christmas Blast with your boys? No? Well, there's other
things.
You should. We're also watching, we watch Die Hard and Home Alone together as a group.
And you could go to our the Bandcamp and download
LaserTime.bandcamp.com. We have a whole
Gremlins one.
Gremlins, Batman Returns, Scrooged, Home Alone 1, Die Hard, and Iron Man 3.
Wow.
Who I championed just a few weeks ago on Laser Time is Shane Black, the undisputed king of Christmas movies. Mm-hmm. He's great.
Good times.
Well, that's it from us this week. We'll be back next week when Homer gives up beer and Duffless. See you then.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun.
In a shoebox.
The party had just begun.
In a shoebox.
The guests included Wolfman,
in a shoebox,
Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Rex's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said,
whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Drax a part of the band, and my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them what is said.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And do my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Monster mash.
You in
Monster mash.